I didn't want to make this episode. It took a lot out of me to make this episode. I know I was supposed to release a part two to the miniseries we had just started, but with the situation currently going on in the world, I figured it would be time to address some things that I think we need to talk about as a community, as hackers and learners and teachers and researchers in the cyber field and the tech industry. I think we all know the dangers of what could come out of this. I don't want to be a doomer. I don't want to be a gloomer. I don't want to always be talking about how bad things are. And I try to keep the show pretty positive. But there's a crisis going on. And there are new weapons at play that in the likes of we've never seen before. It's cyber weapons. Now, for a long time, nuclear weapons were the most advanced and dangerous weapon on the face of the Earth. And in my opinion, they still are. There are enough nukes on this planet to destroy ourselves 7-8 times over. Maybe more. Maybe less. I know there's a lot of them. But it's time we address a new weapon, and a new technology that's possibly going to be used in whatever is going on right now in the current crisis in Ukraine. Now, if you're listening to this and that crisis is over, that's wonderful. But the date I'm recording this, Russia just invaded Ukraine, and there is a full-scale war going on there, and I don't know what's going to happen. I don't. But I think it's time we prepare. And this isn't a political show. I'm not going to try to pick sides with this. And I don't usually talk about politics. I don't like to talk about politics and get very into them with you guys, because I don't want to give a false sense that I'm politically biased about something. But in this case, I am going to be a little biased. Like I said, this was a hard episode to record. So I hope you enjoy it. We're going to be talking about cyber weapons, cyber warfare, and how we can prepare for an all full-scale cyber war. Thank you, and enjoy the episode. That's good. That's really good. This is a Martinelli's, I believe, sparkling cider, non-alcoholic. It's just essentially carbonated apple juice. It's pretty good. Pretty good stuff. So I'm going to go ahead and record this. I'm going to go ahead and get some things off my chest. I usually don't get very political. I don't like to get very political. I have in the past several times, but nothing too serious. But as of now, there is kind of a crisis going on worldwide. We have Russia, which just invaded Ukraine, threatening nuclear power. Russia has already hit Ukraine with cyber attacks, and I figured, why not put what I was doing with my show on halt and talk about this for just a minute? Because, you know, people severely underestimate the power of a cyber attack and what it can do. So I'm not going to have a news section this episode. I will return back to our usual way we do things, hopefully next week, unless something else crazy happens. But I wanted to just go ahead and talk about cyber warfare. What is cyber warfare and what we can do to prepare for it? What can we do to mitigate losses if we are attacked under a cyber attack and in any sort of cyber attack? And some of these steps can be that I'm going to talk about in the preparation section towards the end. Some of the steps can be used for not just the cyber attack, but all sorts of catastrophes and events that would be deemed terrible and tragic. Can barely get that word out. But we're going to go ahead and start this off with what is cyber warfare. Couldn't find a great definition for it online that I liked, so I kind of just took a lot of definitions and made my own. But cyber warfare is when a nation state or entity uses hacking and cyber weapons to attack another nation state or entity in which there is an attack back. So That's kind of the definition I've given. I figured that's going to be pretty fitting for what's going on right now. And I would like to talk about some examples of cyber warfare and how it can affect us not only technologically, but in our day-to-day lives. So before I give these examples, let's go ahead and talk about what we rely on when it comes to, I reckon you would say, cyberspace, everything connected. So let's rewind the clock. We're going to go back in time, about 40 years, 30, 40 years, back when computers and tech was not as big as it is today. So let's say 30 years ago, you have a car. What does it run off of? Gas. You walk out to your car, you crank your car up, you have gas in your car, you can go. Today, our cars are connected to the internet. That's a whole vulnerability in and of itself. Okay, let's go back 30 years. Let's talk about utilities. Power, water, gas, that sort of thing. Back then, you know, they had equipment, they had gauges, and I'm sure they had computers attached to them running things, but it wasn't solely reliant on internet. Now, we see less and less people working those computers and those devices and those gauges and the meters and everything on these utility providers, and it turning more cyber, more tech, more remote. You can control your, for instance, I'll give you an example. In the small town I grew up in, our water plant had one person working there. One. Just one. And everything else was done remotely from the main water provider in the capital of wherever they are. Anyway, I'm not going to say capital, but the headquarters. The headquarters, they took care of everything remotely, and they just had one guy there to make sure everything was running smoothly. Now, how do you do that without internet? You don't. So that is also a vulnerability in and of itself. So when we talk about everything I'm talking about, and you think, well, you know, I want you to have that mindset. What are we connected to with the internet now that we weren't 30 years ago? And how that poses a vulnerability to the way we go about our daily lives. I want you to have that mindset going into this. And as I said in the intro, I don't like being doom and gloom. I don't like talking negatively about world events. But this is something we need to talk about. And I think we all need to be made aware of how severe this can be, because I've seen a lot of people, especially in this community, just blowing off the severities of what is going on. Blowing off, oh, well, you know, that's not going to happen to us. Or, oh, well, you know, it couldn't happen. Or even the sheer ignorance of a lot of Americans. And I'm not trying to be racist. I'm American, too. But I've seen this a lot where people in my own home country say, yeah, well, what is Russia going to do? Are they going to march and step foot right on our country? Like, I doubt they'd do that. Everyone here has guns, and everyone here can defend ourselves. They don't have to. If they hit us remotely with the cyber attack, we're all stuck here. And they can do it all the way across the world. They don't ever have to step a single foot on U.S. soil to attack us. So I want you to have that mindset going into this. And I really want you to understand the severities and the catastrophe that could come out of this if we don't prepare, if we don't ready ourselves. So let's talk about some examples we've seen in the past of cyber warfare. And now there are a whole lot of them, and I'm sure we could all think of at least 20 past examples of cyber warfare that have happened in our lifetimes. But I picked out three that I think really suit what's kind of going on right now. So the first one I want to talk about, and I'm not going to go super in-depth in these, I'm just going to kind of name them. And if it'd be something you'd like me to cover in the future, I would be more than happy to cover them in the future. But first one I want to talk about and make an example of is the Sony Pictures hack. So, long story short, Sony makes a movie. Movie makes fun of Korean dictator. Korean dictator angry. Korean angry dictator hires Korean hackers to hack Sony. And then that of itself is an example of cyber warfare. You see, we have a nation state that has been provoked, so the nation state uses cyber warfare to make a point, to drive their an example, to drive their agenda, to show that, hey, we don't like what you did, so this is what we're going to do about it. So we see one example. So what would be another good example? Because that was it was a bit of a one-off. Didn't really go much further than that. So let's talk about Stuxnet. I'm sure we've all heard of Stuxnet. As I said, I would love to make an episode about that in the future. But essentially, it was a virus that could hide itself in embedded systems, such as Iranian nuclear power plants. So I would love to make a whole episode discussing that. I'm not at the moment. I feel like I would get some of the facts wrong. But that is just one example of a weapon, a cyber weapon, used to target a nation's infrastructure. It was targeting utilities like power plants to be able to attack those things, possibly even shut them down. So that's just one weapon, and it was a zero day that was able to cause a lot of havoc. And as we know from Stuxnet, it did cause a lot of havoc. So that's just one of those weapons that can be used, and that's just one of them. Now, you have to think, that's just one we know about. What about the ones we don't? How many of these weapons do we not know about? Here's another example I would like to talk about that has a little bit to do with what the current situation is. Fancy Bear, the Russian state-sponsored hacker who was involved in the Ukraine attacks and back into the mid-2010s, he was a very active Russian state-sponsored hacker, carried out several attacks, major attacks. It was on the news several times. So people like that do exist. So what I want to pull from these examples are three things. One, what happens when you provoke a country and then they fight with cyber weapons rather than physical weapons? See, no people really suffer in a gruesome way when you fight with cyber weapons. So it's a much, I will say, it is a cleaner way to do things, but it's a psychological way of attacking and combating your opponents. Cyber warfare is. So another example, Stuxnet. So we talked about that. We have zero days and tons of weapons just like that. And then we talked about Fancy Bear, a state-sponsored hacker. Those Korea has them, China has them, America has them, Russia has them. Countries all over the world have these state-sponsored hackers. I'm not going to say they're all right now attacking different states, but in the future, I could definitely see something like that happening. So what are some examples, we would say, of these attacks? What are some more examples we could talk about of these different types of attacks? And I've made a list of roughly six types of attacks that could critically attack our systems, our infrastructure, and the way we go about life. And like I said at the beginning, I want you to have that mindset of what is connected to the internet now. Because if it's connected to the internet now, it is vulnerable. Do we rely on it? What do we use it for? So, first one I want to talk about is digital propaganda. And I put on my notes, in parentheses, through social media. So digital propaganda, I'm sure we all know what that is. We have, you know what propaganda is, I assume. But digital propaganda is a little bit different. It's the same thing, but pushed through social media. So we have platforms such as TikTok, Facebook, and Twitter. All a nation has to do is get trending on these platforms with whatever propaganda that they want to spread, and then have it shared, and then it gets shared multiple times, millions and millions and millions of times, to create disinformation. We see this currently right now in Russia, as Russia spreads propaganda around their own country that they are invading Ukraine to stop neo-Nazis, which is a bit interesting due to the president of Ukraine being Jewish. I thought I don't understand how they're neo-Nazis if president of Ukraine is Jewish, but hey, who am I to judge? But that's just one example of digital propaganda, just lies being spread to kind of paint a bad picture on certain topics, maybe certain religions, certain governments, certain individuals. You can spread that right now through social media, and that to me is one of the most dangerous weapons we have, because that can turn the tide of our own democracies. It can make us believe lies that don't exist, so votes are cast in certain favors. So digital propaganda through social media is just one of them, but I believe that is a pretty major tool, and I do believe we're going to be seeing a lot of that soon, if we're not already seeing a lot of that currently, even in the states that I currently live in, such as the United States. We've seen it before. So let's talk about a different type of attack. I think one we all kind of expect to be on this list. I made a whole episode about it. DDoS attacks against our own countries. So you think of DDoS attacks, like what are they going to attack that's going to be critical to everything through DDoS? Okay, well, it's tax season, so they could attack the IRS servers. They could attack, let's say, critical infrastructure such as utilities and things like that. They could attack major region servers in our area, so our internet slows down. They could attack our 4G infrastructure. You know, I was talking to my wife before I made this. I said, you know, back before everything was what I like to call VoLTE, voice over LTE, which is now being heavily, heavily pushed here in the States, we had 2G. So if the 4G towers went down and we couldn't get reliable, fast 4G internet, or if the 4G was flooded, we at least had 2G, and I could make a 2G call and at least get that through. Now, that is a lot more limited. It depends on what part of the world you're in, but I know where I'm at, they're currently swapping everything over to 4G and really pushing 4G, or VoLTE, voice over LTE, as I like to call it. I don't know if any of you guys call it that. I think it's a pretty cool thing to call it. I think we should get that started. We should all start calling it that. Make it a name. But yeah, you can imagine, though, what a DDoS attack and how much damage a DDoS attack could do to certain pieces of infrastructure. For example, let's say we have PBS. If you don't know what PBS is, it's a public broadcasting station. It's free news for everyone in the U.S. I think they have a radio show, and they have a TV station that you can just buy an antenna, plug it into your TV, and you can just watch it to keep up with currently what's kind of going on in the world. They cover all sorts of things. They have documentaries, that sort of thing. I'm not trying to sponsor PBS here, but let's use them as an example. If we were to DDoS their infrastructure, if we were to DDoS their systems, or not we, I keep saying we, if they, state-sponsored actors, were to attack their systems, then we wouldn't get the news. We wouldn't be able to get anything. We wouldn't understand what's going on in the world, because the flow of the information from journalists and news stations stops coming because they're being flooded with traffic. So now we don't know what's going on in the world. We're all kind of blind. So then at that point, we got to swap to social media and try to gather it this way, or Google things. And even at that point, if they were to target multiple journalists and news outlets like CNN, Fox, ABC, MSNBC, that kind of thing, if they were to do that, then we wouldn't know what's going on in the world. We wouldn't have any updates other than other sources of information, such as radio, and even that could be attacked, theoretically. So DDoS attacks, very, very, very major player in the game of cyber weapons, and I genuinely think we're going to be seeing a lot of that soon. So just keep a lookout and stay prepared. Another cyber weapon, these two kind of go together, cyber espionage. So we've seen, even in our own country, in the NSA, when it was leaked that we were spying on everyone. And even recently, I think I covered that last week or week before in the news section, where the NSA was, it had been leaked again that the NSA had been spying on citizens again. And don't think that they're just spying on us. I'm sure they're spying on everyone in the world who has an internet connection. So cyber espionage is a major player in this game, which can lead to the next weapon that I like to talk about, or is government hacks, data leaks, and sabotage. So through cyber espionage, you can get access to, let's say, classified emails, classified email servers, all sorts of things. And we've seen this. I think there was a 222 gigabyte leak of emails from Russia just a few days ago. So that we're going to be seeing a lot of data leaks and hacks leading to data leaks to sabotage different countries and kind of get ahead on this game of war, per se, this cyber war that is just now kind of starting, that we're just kind of seeing. And it's just interesting that we're finally, this is a new technology, and this will be the first time it's heavily used in a major global scale conflict like it is. So another weapon that could be used to critical, or to really attack our critical infrastructures, are cyber attacks on our utilities such as power, water, and gas. You know, we saw with the pipeline incident recently with the ransomware, it stopped up oil pipelines for quite a while and jacked oil prices straight up. So things like that, that can drive up the prices of our oil and attack our economy. So you attack our utilities, though. Let's say they attack, it's an example here, New York Power, right? I don't know the company for New York or Florida Power or California power plants. They attack things like that. And then overnight, now you wake up in the morning and you're like, oh, my phone didn't charge. My lights aren't working. Go check your breakers and your breakers aren't working. Or your breakers are working fine. None of them are flipped. And you're like, man, nobody has power. You walk down your street. You ask your neighbor, hey, do you have power? It's like, no, I don't have power either. All of a sudden, your infrastructure when it comes to electricity has been attacked. And now you're all out of power and kind of fucked. So that's something. It could happen. It could happen not only to your power, but your water. What if they were to attack your water treatment facilities? What are you going to do then? You know, when it comes to power, power plants, they make backups of those things. So, and we can live without electricity as long as we have the three main survival pieces, or the three main keys to survival, which are power, water, not power, water. I'm messing up here. It's very late when I'm recording this, but water, food, and shelter, the three things you need for survival. So if they attack power, we can still live because we still have our homes, we still have our water, and we still have our food. But then they do attack the water, and now we can't get clean water where we're at. So everybody starts rushing to fill up their tubs and every jug they have. So they attack our water, we all thirst to death. Unless you are on well or and solar to pump that well, you're kind of screwed unless you have access to clean water. If they attack our natural gas, do you have a natural gas oven? If so, then you probably won't be cooking with it, that's for sure. If you run off of propane, which, I mean, it is a natural gas. I'm not a physicist. I don't know much about that kind of stuff. I'm going to just let the propane situation go, because I do not sell propane and propane accessories. Another weapon that we could definitely see is attacks on our economy, which is kind of what we're doing now to Russia. We started sanctioning their economy, which isn't cyber war. It's more of economic warfare. But you could see how cyber attacks on our economy can be very critical, such as, so let's say they do knock out our communications, right, through 4G towers. They knock out our access to internet. Well, what do you think that's going to do to stocks? None of us, we are so used now to being able to open our phone and look at what we've invested in. I get my phone out, I can't see my investments. What do you think that's going to do to the market? It's probably going to pull it straight down. You're going to have a lot of people trying to pull out of the market and keep their money as is because they don't know what's going to happen. So people that do have the ability to pull out are probably going to pull out of the market. So it's going to shoot stocks straight down. What do you think is going to happen to banks? In this situation, if they were to attack our banks or our systems that hold banks together, such as Stripe, that kind of, I think it's Stripe, anyway, that kind of hold things together, allow you to quickly sign in with things. If they were to attack something like that, we would, our banks would just go straight down with no way to send money and sign up for different services. Or if they were to attack our reserves or our banks directly, we would wake up and I would go to fill up my gas tank in the morning before work and I would swipe my card and I would just keep getting declined. All my card can't communicate with my bank to pull that money out, so the banks put everything on hold until the situation is resolved. So I say all of that to lead you to this. The urban legend itself, straight from Live Free or Die Hard, a fire sale. It's something I wanted to talk about. It's kind of made fun of. It's kind of picked on. But if you don't know what a fire sale is, I'll explain it to you. It came sort of an urban legend from what I found. Now, it may have come before this. I'm not entirely too sure, but where I heard of it was out of the Live Free or Die Hard movie with Bruce Willis. Great movie, but did not get hacking very accurate. But it did make a pretty fair point on a nation-state attack and what it could mean to our country. And it's called a fire sale. It's a three-step attack on a nation's infrastructure. So step one, you shut down and attack their transportation. So now you can't go anywhere. You attack things like public transport, satellites and GPSs. You attack things like that, train systems, just mainly public transport. And now, I mean, when this movie came out in the mid-2000s, we weren't as connected to the internet as we are now. And even in that movie, it did a lot of damage. And it made a pretty good example to show what a cyber attack on our country could theoretically do. It completely crippled them. And now we have our cars connected to the internet. So imagine this. Your car is connected to the internet. What if it has a zero day in it that's been sold to a certain nation state? So let's hypothetically say a car company A connects all their cars to the internet now and has all these cool little doodads and doohiggies in the car to do all these cool little things like connect to your Spotify and play music and surf the web if you're just sitting there on your little screen. And now that gets attacked through a zero day. So car company A, all of their cars are now attacked and shut down and can't use them anymore. You can't use your internet-connected car because you relied on a internet-connected car. So transportation, even today, is way more connected to the internet than it used to be. 30 years ago, your bus driver, he had a map, and he knew his route, and he picked people up. Now, your bus driver has a GPS and a system in his truck that's connected to the internet where it communicates back to their base station. So without that information, would that be able to cripple public transport? It would be, I'm sure it wouldn't be easy, but I'm sure there are zero days to even attack our railway systems. That's major transport. Our boating systems, we've seen even bug bounty programs recently targeting our shipping transportation from China and India and the UK all over the world, attacking these systems and showing where there was even, I think I saw a talk on in DEF CON about this, where a guy was using Shodan to scan for devices out in the sea and be able to attack those devices and remotely shut those ships down, completely take control of the whole ship. So that's step one. You attack their transportation. Step two, you attack their communication and their finances. We've kind of already talked about ways to do that. You know, let's say they DDoS our satellites, or they DDoS, or even really 0 days on our 4G infrastructure and our internet's infrastructure. So we lose all communication, which will completely destroy our finances, as all of our finances now are online, for the most part. Not many people use cash anymore, and it's kind of sad. Step three, utilities. So you attack our transportation, you attack our communication and finances, and then you attack our utilities. At that point, it is everything. Everything must go, and that's why they call it a fire sale. And, you know, it's a cheesy urban legend, and it came from a movie, but it is a tactic that honestly could be used today. It could be used tomorrow. It could be used any minute now. We don't know, and I don't want to make it a doom and gloom show, but we genuinely don't know where this could go. So we're going to get you a quick break, and then I'm going to come back to the episode and tell you what I'm doing and what you can do to start preparing for this. So that way, if it does happen, we're ready. If it doesn't happen, then you're still ready in case it does. So we'll be right back. Let's take a quick break. So what am I doing to prepare for this upcoming or possible upcoming scenario or situation in which cyber warfare is used to attack critical infrastructure? Well, there's not a whole lot as civilians and regular people we can do, but we can stay prepared. So where I grew up by the coast, the Gulf Coast. So hurricanes were kind of normal for us. And we kind of tried to always stay prepared and have plenty of supplies on hand in case something did happen. So I kind of grew up in that mindset of any given day now, the news could come on and then they say, oh, a storm is coming, get shelter now. So I kind of grew up with that mindset and tried to stay prepared. So what I've done over time, I've built several bug out bags and things like that. I would love to do a whole episode about that, even do a YouTube video on what I carry in my bug out bag. But what am I doing now to stay prepared? Well, let's think of our three key survival points. What did I talk about earlier? You need food, water, and shelter. The first thing you need is shelter. So let's go ahead and talk about what I'm doing to have shelter in case something like this happens. I've got my home, of course. I've got it fortified. I live in a very small, nice community of like-minded individuals where we all kind of stay prepared and look after one another. People I've known for a very long time. So that's one thing we can do is have our home located in a very secure, safe area of people that you personally know and trust. Now, don't tell everyone that you're preparing. That could cause a little bit of hysteria. We don't want to cause that. And that's not what I'm trying to do with this show. But I do want you guys to stay prepared. So let's talk about, like I said, shelter. Let's make sure our homes are protected and safe and fortified. If where you're at, maybe you're in a country or a state where you're not allowed to have a firearm, but I do recommend having some sort of firearm if you can, just in case things do go wild, people start acting crazy, and the break-ins start. So just have some sort of protection. I also advise having things like cameras, an alarm system, on some sort of backup battery, preferably solar if you can afford that. If you can't, a good locks and a weapon should be just fine. Second thing we want to talk about, water. You can survive a lot longer without food than you can with water. So let's talk about that. What am I doing to prepare for that? I have several big 7 and 8 gallon jugs that I use to store water in. And you say, well, that's not going to last you very long. Well, I picked a location to live in that, towards the back of the property, we have a natural spring flowing creek. So because of that, I can go back there, I can get fresh water, and I can purify it. That's the other thing we need to stock up on, water purification. If you don't feel like getting all the equipment to purify your own water, which isn't much, you can actually do it just with bleach. But now, there's a process to that, and do not do that without proper training. I am not a medical advisor or anything like that, so do not go drinking bleach. But there are videos and resources on the internet that you can go watch and read and learn from on how to do that yourself. I'll be releasing some stuff about that on Twitter this week and on Instagram this week. But what can you do to prepare for water? Like I said, water purification methods, a life straw. I have several life straws here in my own home, just around the house in different spots. So if we need water, we can just grab it and go back there and get water. Now, do I want to drink out of a creek? No, I don't think any of us want to just go drink out of a creek. If you do, then and that's your thing, go right ahead. Me personally, I like fresh water. But when it comes to a situation like that, you do what you have to do to survive. So let's talk about food. What am I doing to prepare for food and staying full? So I grew up in a very rural area. We grew up hunting and fishing and trapping and netting and that sort of thing. So what I've done, I've stocked up on things like rice, dry beans, dry foods like that that can last for a very long time in storage. I've stocked up on things like that, so I have those sorts of foods ready at my disposal. But what I've also done is stocked up on things like ammo. Now, don't go just buy tons and tons of ammo, but ammo for hunting. I've stocked up on fishing. Still in the process of stocking and topping some stuff off, but stocking up on fishing supplies, traps. Now, everybody, and nets. Now, everybody says, I'll just hunt for my food. Well, why hunt for your food when you can let your traps hunt for you and you can stay at home protecting your family? In a situation like that, I think it's important to have things like live traps, steel traps. Now, I'm getting into the bushcraft side of things, but if things do go bad, I want to be able to prepare a constant source of food. So if I have plenty of supplies to fish and to hunt for my food, I will be set. So I have things like nets. I'm not going to go into that kind of stuff, like hoop nets, gill nets, that sort of thing. It's just random knowledge, I guess. But here's a tip, and it might save your life one day. Go fishing. Catch a few fish. Eat what's necessary. Save the rest. Use the rest of your fish as bait. Put that bait in your live traps and that sort of thing. Put it out in the woods. And animals, such as raccoons and possums, will come and try to eat that fish, and they'll get stuck in your live trap. Now, you don't want to eat that sort of thing. I completely understand. If you have plenty of food stocked up for 20 years worth of survival, go right ahead. But for me, I like to hunt and fish for my food. And I just grew up in situations where that's kind of what we had to do. So I'm used to that mindset. So I'm trying to share this with you so maybe you can better understand. But let your traps and your nets work for you rather than going down to the creek every day and walking out in the woods looking for something to kill or catch to eat, whereas you could let other tools do that for you while you do other things. Now, I've covered food, I've covered water, and I've covered shelter. Now, those are the basic three things that you need for survival in any situation. Let's talk about what else I'm doing to prepare, because I'm not just going to have food, water, and shelter. I'm going to have things like light sources. So I've stocked up on things like candles. I have 1 year's worth of batteries for my lamps. I keep all these LED lamps that don't use a whole lot of power, and I keep at least a year's worth of batteries on hand. If you do the math, I get 300 hours on each full battery charge on them. So if I use it for 1 hour a night before I go to bed or when I wake up in the morning, if I just use it for about an hour a day, I would say I am pretty stocked up on batteries. One charge will last me almost a whole year, but I like to have several cases of batteries on hand just in case someone else needs them, or you can use them as a bargaining tool. It's another thing I'm doing, stocking up on bargaining tools. If the fit does hit the Shan, and everything and all of our infrastructure goes down, we can't buy, sell, or trade, or we can't buy or sell anything because we don't have access to money, what are you going to do? You're going to trade. So now would be a good time to stock up on tradable items. Things like tobacco products, alcohol products. Those are the kinds of things I'm stocking up on to use as a bit of a currency. I like to stock up and have maybe a carton of cigarettes stored away and a few bottles of Jack Daniels, which could save my life one day if I need medical gear and someone is willing to trade me medical gear for a couple bottles of Jack Daniels. I will gladly make that trade. So that will be the new currency in that sort of situation. Another thing that I'm doing that you can also kind of prepare for are emergency two-way radios. So anyone can go to your local sporting goods store and just pick up two-way radios. I recommend having rechargeable ones and rechargeable batteries, but if you don't, that's fine. Make sure you stock up on batteries. But to keep in touch with your family and things like that, it doesn't require you to connect to internet. It doesn't require you to connect to any sort of cell tower. It's just emergency two-way radios to keep in contact with you and your family or your friends or your group or whatever you're doing. So communication is key, and we need to, if you're in any kind of group, if you have a family, I think everyone should have some way to communicate with each other. So an emergency two-way radio is the best way to go on that. I have several radios, and I have an emergency radio, a batteryless crank radio, and then I have my Uniden BC75SXLT. I'm looking at it right now, actually. It's a BC75XLT. It's just a simple scanner that I use to scan for local frequencies and emergency frequencies to see what's going on in the area. So, and that's just one thing you can do. Another thing you can do, which I think is the most important thing you can do in this situation as everything's going on right now, keep a full tank of gas. Don't let it get below half. At any given moment, we could get a notification on our phone saying, hey, buddy, you now are kind of screwed. Your country's screwed, and gas prices are just going to go straight up, or the power is going to go out in your county. We're being attacked. Anything like that, you could get any sort of notification letting you know. And then if you don't have enough gas in your car to get home, then you're kind of screwed. You're going to have to walk through a very dangerous situation. So keeping a full tank of gas, I would say, is number one. That is the number one thing you can do on this whole list. So that's going to kind of wrap the show up. A few announcements. I have partnered with Proton Mail. If you would like to sponsor, or not sponsor the show, if you'd like to support the show, sign up with Proton Mail or Proton VPN. A link will be in the description for Proton VPN. You can also use that to sign up with Proton Mail, however you choose. But it's a link for Proton VPN. That's my recommended VPN. I use it. It's open source. It's free. It's built on OpenVPN. I'm not going to go a whole lot into that. You guys already know. But that's my recommended VPN. So if you'd like to support the show and sign up for Proton VPN, there'll be a link in the description of this show. Thank you for listening. Go ahead. If you'd like to join the Discord channel, I'm usually pretty active on there. If you'd like to message me directly, consider messaging me on Instagram, Discord, or Twitter. If you have a question or recommendation for the show, my email is also in the description. Thank you very much. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode, and I will see you, hopefully, in 2 weeks.